The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody, come on. Welcome, welcome. It is Thursday, the fourth day of April. Glad you are here. 866-660-5759. That's how you call us. That's how you text us on the Via Scan of Las Colinas text line. Look at there, 866-660-5759. When Mike invoked Jimmy Kimmel, which just makes me recoil because he's just a disgusting human being. But every once in a while, I mean, even a broken clock is right twice a day, and he was making some observations, interestingly, about Japan. Another role obsessed with Japan because Mike is bound for there. I then saw, I guess it was last night's monologue, where he said he is freshly back from Japan and just cannot believe how clean it is, and it makes America, and we all love America, we like to say, but our messy, wonderful, freedom-laden society is just a pit, apparently, compared to the just crazy cleanliness of Japan. And he said, look, after traveling to Japan, I realized that this place, the USA, we're always chanting about, is filthy and disgusting. We were in Japan for 7 days. Not only did I not encounter a single dirty bathroom, bathrooms in Tokyo and Kyoto are cleaner than our operating rooms. Everywhere you go, the bathrooms are clean. They don't smell bad. They have those toilets that wash you from the inside out. He said it's true everywhere, not just hotels, restaurants, bars, truck stops. We went to truck stops, and I swear the bathrooms were cleaner than Jennifer Garner's teeth. So, all right. And I think somebody mentioned to me once after a trip that they had made that you can like leave, you know, your camera bag at a street corner, walk around the block and come back and it's still there, or it's in the hands of a nearby policeman who will hand it to you. How does that work? How does that happen? Is that something we could ever do? Couple of thoughts, and we can weave that in because I'm going to be all over the place here, and as I often am. Bottom of this hour, State Senator Brandon Creighton on the battle against DEI and the bill that's making everybody freak out at various universities, et cetera, et cetera. In a minute, we'll have an update on the car crash heard around the world, and Rishi Rice is finally speaking out and saying, I take full responsibility. Yeah. Well, he'll open that massive checkbook and make these people go away who are in that accident, which, by the way, if you can reach a settlement with people, you get to do that. My question for you is, if you had been engaged in street racing and caused a massive accident that could have killed multiple people, and then you left the scene, would you do any jail time? I mean, let's presume first offense. Well, I guess, right? I don't think Rishi Rice has a rap sheet. I think somebody's doing some jail time if they are not a wealthy and storied athlete. So much talk of privilege, white privilege, this privilege, that privilege, and so much of it is phony. The real privilege is money and fame. You got those things going for you, you're nigh on to untouchable. I don't think Rishi Rice will do I don't know if he's going to get community service for that. So we're about to see how, you talk about multiple levels of justice. I think we're about to see it. And I'm not, I got nothing against the young man. I mean, he needs to make a lot better decisions in his life. He's a big old dummy. He deserves a ferocious scolding at the hands of our justice system. Deserves some kind of consequence. And I'm sorry, I would think other than financial. Ooh, what's he going to give? There are these people in that white SUV that got bounced around like a pinball machine. Folks in there got hurt pretty badly. I mean, well, no injury is small when it's yours. But it's just $1 million to make them go away. You know, ooh, $1 million. I know, listen, $1 million is $1 million. But that's not going to cause one downtick in young Mr. Rice's lifestyle. So we're about to see where the real privilege kicks in all of our systems, and that is wealth and fame. Anyway, though, on the whole Japan thing, can we, you know, gee, why can't we do that? Because since Jimmy Kimmel, as a leftist, holds America in, shall we say, lower regard than I do, and perhaps you do, there is something about, I mean, whether it's crime, whether it's cleanliness, whether it's whatever, Japanese society, there is the homogeneity. Everyone is the same. This gets kind of interesting. In America, what do we say? Diversity is our strength. You know, there is a way in which that's true. I mean, diversity is part of our charm. Diversity is part of what makes us a wonderful story. You can't go to France and become French, but you can come to America and become American. And so many people have. And the folks who have done so legally, and the folks who have done so and embraced American language and culture and history and values, they have made America great. Others, not so much. We certainly talk about that a lot. But diversity is messy. apparently figuratively and literally. When everybody's from everywhere, and I don't mean all the swarthy foreigners are the reasons that we have a sloppy country, not at all. It's just we're not going, the homogeneity is not just of race, where you go to Japan and everybody's Japanese. It's of behavior, of culture, of there's a lockstep participation in if a country just decides it wants to do something. I mean, it's like somebody put a bomb in a trash can in a Tokyo street, and they said, well, we can't have that, so we're not going to have trash cans. Everybody just keep your trash and take it home with you and, you know, do something with it. And they do. And the streets are spotless. Spotless! Can't do that in America. In America, you can't tell me what to do. I mean, we'd all go nuts and assert our freedoms and stuff like that, which, by the way, is exactly what I want to do. And so I don't necessarily mean that Japan is less free, although they probably are, but there is a willful adoption of self-restraint that we're never going to have in America. And I don't want to tell other countries how to do their gig. You know, it's one of the great charms of Japan, and that self-restraint and that self control that we will never have is that they I don't, does it mean they're not maybe as free spirited as out there as, because another big part of just is that individualism is just not a big Japanese thing. And all of this smacks of really broad stereotypes. And I don't want to do that with too broad a brush, but it's pretty true that the whole American be yourself, get out there, stand out. You know, Japan is very much about uniformity, very much about adherence to shared, just societal rules and expectations. I'll just never forget this story of this girl, the little schoolgirl, headed for, you know, there's a school, big heavy iron gates. School starts at 8:00, and at 8:00 the door closes. And she's busting to make it 7:59 and 45 seconds, 7:59 and 50 seconds. Somebody's at the gate. Close the gate on her. I don't think she was like killed or anything. Might've had an owie. Bottom line was be on time. And you're sitting there in America. It's like, kids coming. We'll hold the gate open for nope. And that may well be really anecdotal, or it may be really emblematic of how they do things. And it's weird, as I remember telling that story 20 years ago and saying, okay, that's crazy, but there's an, I bet she wasn't late again, right? It's, I have a grudging admiration for that kind of slavish devotion to detail, and we'll never do it. And I don't want to do it. We're different. We're Americans. We're 30 seconds late. Hold the door open. We're 10 minutes late. You know, it's on us. So we're never going to do it. I don't know what that has to do with cleanliness necessarily. It would seem like that's something we could do, or do better at, but we don't. So listen, are you kidding? At this point, you know, where is the bar set in America? Where's the bar set? But before we get to a place where our truck stop bathrooms are clean enough to eat off of, let's get to the point where our city streets are not littered with spent needles and human waste. Maybe if we get that taken care of in some major American cities I could name, you know, first things first. Speaking of American cities, the freshly Republican mayor of Dallas, you remember when he was on the show? When was it? Was it on the occasion of his Republican conversion, or was it an earlier conversation? Anyway, he floated that at one point he thought DFW, one of his things he wanted to do, since the Cowboys play in Arlington, is he wants an NFL team for Dallas. It's like, wait a minute, what? Two NFL teams here in the DFW area? Well, why not? New York has two. LA has two. We're very nearly as big. So why not? Well, something happened in the news like this week that makes this, dare we say, at least a slim possibility? Tell you about it next, 8:22. All right. 828 866 660 5759. So it was a little while back that in talking about, you know, the future of Dallas and his vision as mayor and et cetera, I think it actually was before he got smart and switched to the Republican Party. Mayor Eric Johnson of Dallas told us that of the things he wants to do, I mean, he wants to, you know, promote growth and, you know, fight crime. And by the way, got to say, from Chief Garcia to Mayor Johnson, the city of Dallas and the crime stats are really, really something to be proud of. They crow properly about that a lot. But one of the things Mayor Johnson dropped on us was, yeah, and I think I might want to get an NFL team. And I said, yeah, we have one. And he said, well, Arlington has one. We want one. I want the Cowboys to, Dallas Cowboys haven't played in Dallas since they played in the Cotton Bowl. You know, because Texas Stadium was in Irving, and they just keep getting farther and farther away. In some future century, the Cowboys will be playing in Weatherford. I don't know. Bottom line is, Mayor Johnson said, let's get us a second NFL team. And my first thought was, what? Just what? And then you think that New York has the Giants and the Jets. You know, Los Angeles has the Rams and the Chargers. And I know that we're not as quite as big. I mean, Chicago has two baseball teams, your Cubs and your White Sox, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, it's the NFL. Wouldn't you think that there would be a marketplace that could support it? But then instantly, as I retweeted this without a whole lot of comment, people said, would Jerry permit this? Like, Jerry has veto power over what the league wants? The league may have had it up to their eyeballs with Jerry. Would the league protect Jerry and go, oh, we're not going to do that to Jerry Jones? We're not going to make him, you know, have competition in his own, right, in his own backyard? Or are there owners who would love to see Jerry just have to deal with another team that's actually playing in Dallas? So who might that be? How does that work? Well, there is a team that was just given a big back of the hand by taxpayers. As happens all the time, the team came to taxpayers. What's true of every stadium? Basketball, football, baseball, hockey. What's true of every stadium? It is the business place of an enormously wealthy person. Why can't they build their own dang stadiums or fix their own dang stadiums? Why are taxpayers always asked to foot the bill? And in Kansas City, they said a big no thank you. I think it involved Arrowhead. I think it involved where the Royals play. It's like, whoa. And that caused Chiefs ownership and to say, we look forward to making, you know, to reaching some agreement. And no team wants to move. But instantly the air filled with the notion that maybe the Chiefs would come home because they were once the Dallas Texans there for about 10 minutes in history, 60-some years ago. So would that have all of us? Not only would we have the Cowboys, we would have Rashi Rice's driving adventures and Travis Kelce's love life. Anyway, this is not me suggesting this will happen, but I don't know. You got in Dallas, you got a mayor who wants an NFL team, and maybe we at some point will have two. Wouldn't that be something? All right, next up, State Senator Brandon Creighton and the war on DEI, a war that is being won. 8:31, Mark Davis, Nikki Whaley is in the newsroom. It is Thursday, 4th of April. Glad you are here. Mark Davis, 660 AM, the answer. So yesterday, we were talking about some of the DEI stories in the news about how at the University of Texas, faced with a law that says you can't do this stuff anymore. We can't have the racism and the societal and academic poison of ignoring merit and focusing on, like I say, the pigment and the plumbing on race and other irrelevancies. DEI is a terrible thing. And we in Texas are going about the business of getting rid of it. And where did all that get started? With a piece of legislation that this gentleman had a lot to do with. We go to Texas Senate District 4, and that is Senator Brandon Creighton. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Doing great, Mark. Good to be with you this morning.
Nice to have you. Let's learn about you. District 4, if we up here in DFW start driving down 45, 45, 45, and we get to Huntsville, we get to your district pretty soon on the way through like Conroe and Kingwood, and then your district just heads to the coast. And is Galveston actually in the district or just outside it? Because it's a whole lot of the Gulf Coast.
It's 65 miles of beachfront. It is Bolivar there at the coast, and that part of Galveston County that I split with Mays Middleton in the Senate. So the district in my home area, Conroe Woodlands, wraps around from Kingwood, the east side of Houston, to the Ship Channel and to the Louisiana border from there.
Very cool. And you've been there in the Senate since 2014. And before that, you were in the House of Representatives for about 7 years in the 16th district. So you've seen the House, seen the Senate. We're going to talk a little bit about how those bodies are doing in a minute. But first, let's do some DEI. Give me the history of the anti-DEI bill, your role in it, and what it was intended to do.
Mark, as you know that the diversity, equity, inclusion poison that was, you know, rampant across the country on our college campuses, stories coming out of California and Washington. And, you know, what surprised many right here in Texas, we came into the session to go to work on our legislative agenda in January of 23 and filed a very comprehensive bill. I took a lot of arrows for filing that bill, right? Because the nomenclature, it just sounds mean and ugly to go after diversity in equity and inclusion. But professors were being fired for pledging to simply treat every student equally. We had Asian Americans excluded from Texas A&M, DEI strategies, political loyalty oaths, leftist, Marxist oaths that had to be signed for any professor applying for a job, or you need not apply. All of these things and much, much more, we had to do something about it.
What would be, because I got 3 hours every day to explain things, and obviously you go about a lot of this in your business as a legislator. If somebody just asks the question, diversity, equity, inclusion, they sound like such good and noble things. Why, once turned into leftist policy, what made them become bad?
Well, I think over the last 10 years, and certainly after George Floyd's death, they seem to ramp up. And with taxpayer dollars, they went from simple diversity offices to weaponized political entities. And the University of Texas alone had 379 employees through the system making $9 million a year and working every day to separate students and in very divisive ways. That's just not what anyone seeking diversity would seek to accomplish. That's certainly not what Martin Luther King would have espoused. It was wrong. So there were many attempts and pleas during an 8-hour debate on the Senate floor to just kind of change what's broken. There was a North Carolina conference, national conference last year about DEI and universities across the country and these problems. And Texas was named in that conference as the one state in America where it was so deeply rooted that it could not be removed.
Good Lord. So that's where you get Senate Bill 17. And that was the anti-DEI law, AI law that went into effect in January. We'd like to think that once laws are passed, that people dutifully follow them, that universities dutifully follow them. Have you been noticing that some Texas universities are trying to still get away with it?
We've absolutely noticed that, and we're going to have our own set of hearings this interim very soon when the runoffs are complete, and we will call in general counsel, university chancellors, maybe some presidents, not sure about the regents yet, but that's definitely on the table to make sure that the bill is A, understood, and B, that the university system, those institutions are well on their way to compliance. We have the strongest bill in the nation. It has clawback provisions on funding for the university as a whole if they try to rename, relaunch, or reauthorize the effort.
How do you think that's going to go? Do you think they will be brought to heel? Do you think they will ultimately grudgingly comply? Or are we going to have some open warfare because the leftism of American academia, something that Texas is certainly not immune to? You know, this is not your granddaddy's TCU or SMU, even in UNT, don't get me started. And again, fine campuses, fine people, love, you know, all these schools, et cetera, et cetera. But the leftism of academia is absolutely stretched its tentacles into Texas. I think you're going to get pushback.
We're going to get incredible pushback. And obviously, we're picking up on chatter and indications that there are some nefarious, you know, goals related to not complying, and that's what these hearings are for. Look, these universities, we all know, we have some of the finest universities in the world. They are also behemoth bureaucracies, and it's very difficult to root a lot of this out. But you saw you mentioned the University of Texas removed $10 million worth of salary positions this week on an announcement. We have many other indications that our universities across the state are working to comply, but there are interests working against that compliance on campus. So we're going to work together on this. I don't know that we'll have a Harvard, MIT, and Penn moment like we saw in Congress,
right?
Because I think that the leadership is doing their best to be compliant with state law, but there are going to be examples exposed in these hearings where those on campus are not willing to give up on this.
When and where will these hearings be?
They'll be at the state capitol, and they'll be in a few weeks, just after the runoff. We'll make announcements on when those hearings will be held. There'll be public hearings, and we expect university leadership, as I indicated in a letter to them week before last, we expect university leadership to report on exactly how they're working quickly to remove these DEI units.
State Senator Brandon Creighton is here, District 4, down from Conroe and Kingwood and on down toward the Texas coast. Having invoked the runoffs, let's spend our last few minutes talking a little bit about the amazing changes in the wind in Texas politics. When those runoffs happen, May 28th, first of all, do you have any idea why we got to wait so stinking long for the runoffs? Why couldn't we have had those by now?
You know, I was talking about that last night with some folks at dinner. They were asking me exactly the same thing. Why so long?
Yeah.
It's incredibly expensive. It's agonizing for the voters. It takes us right to the end of school and the beginning of summer. They should be soon. you know, sooner than that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a long list of things to address. So get with your buddies and let's work on that too. But first, other fish to fry. When these runoffs come and go, Dade Phelan may or may not even be in the House anymore. We may finish up the return to private life of a number of legislators who thwarted the will of Republican voters with their fealty to Phelan and their attachment to a Paxton impeachment that was deeply unpopular. Do you sense the same kind of just very interesting grassroots flavored added conservatism change in the political winds that a lot of other people notice?
Mark, this election cycle, the lobbyists, the special interests, the stakeholders, and the big money are losing ground, and the grassroots and the everyday, you know, Mr. and Ms. Jones in Texas and their family, they're gaining ground. And that is, very exciting for many in the Texas political landscape. Obviously, we saw in the first round of the primary, there were many changes made on incumbents being pulled out, and there are many incumbents in a runoff in the second vote getter position. So the public, you know, the people of Texas are going to speak loud and clear. I think there will be turnout in this runoff election May 28th, and I will be working with many new faces.
Do you look forward to one of those new faces being a different Speaker of the Texas House?
You know, on my side in the Senate, I carry 50% of the conservative bill load in the Texas Senate and the largest legislative agenda overall. I definitely always want House leadership to be favorable towards the bills that I feel like reflect the pulse of Texas being the conservative state that we are. I've been a Republican caucus chairman in the House. I never ran for speaker. I know all those positions are difficult, but those positions have to serve in a way that doesn't please Austin. Those positions have to serve in a manner that pleases Texas.
It's almost
we're going to see those results loud and clear on what people would like to have happen very soon. Either way, I believe we have a speaker's race on our hands in the House already in play.
Oh, we do. I had Dr. Oliverson on just the other day, and he's developing a quite the broad fan base. It's been almost 7 months since you and your 30 colleagues sat there in that room for the surreal experience of the Paxton impeachment. What are the lessons of that, and how did that all grab you?
Well, it was a 107-year impeachment event that was just full of issues and problems related to process and following precedent on the House side. In the Senate, the Dallas Morning News called me one of the shameful six because I voted to throw the whole thing out at the beginning of the trial. And obviously, there were six votes to do exactly that on a motion to dismiss. But we proceeded into the trial. I took a couple hundred pages of personal notes during all of that and was immersed in evidence that some of the best attorneys in the country presented, did their best to roast our attorney general. At the end of the day, there was a Democrat vote on every article to acquit. So the Senate saw the whole effort much, much differently than the House.
Gotcha. You think Paxton's going to go after Cornyn in the Senate in 26?
I think Paxton has a lot of plans ahead of him. I'm not exactly sure politically what he's going to decide to do, but he seems interested in the Senate seat and making sure that someone is serving there for the future that reflects the will of Texas. I think he's got a lot of work on his hands as attorney general, and he's been very successful. So I can't speak to his political goals, but I know he's positioned well with the public to want him to go further.
Well, serving Southeast Texas in the House and now the Senate, 4th District Senator Brandon Creighton. Great to spend so much time with you on a whole lot of issues, sir. Appreciate it a lot. Hope to talk to you soon. Listen, in fact, let's visit either maybe right before, during, or after those hearings where the university folks are reminded of what their DEI responsibilities are, shall we?
Absolutely. We'll stay tuned on that. We'll connect back together, and I'll give some good updates. Mark, thanks for the invitation today.
My enormous pleasure. State Senator Brandon Creighton, 851. All right. What do I have in store for the 9 o'clock hour? I'm only doing part of the work. You're doing some of the heavy lifting at 866-660-5759. That's how you call us. That's where you text us on the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line. So as I get out of the way for top of the hour news, as we begin, we'll take a look at just some of the rank arrogance of Secretary Pete, who hates you if you don't want an electric car, and revealed that just yesterday. Then a really weird Twitter back and forth that I had with a Houston area reporter. There is a guy named, speaking to people, everybody's named Brandon now. Let's go, Brandon. Brandon Gill, there was Brandon Creighton. Brandon Herrera is running against Tony Gonzalez in the 23rd District of Texas. And he's an interesting cat, let's just say. Got some YouTube-related Second Amendment aficionado-type stuff, which is all absolutely great. That's wonderful. Is he a little quirky? Yes. Did he have a video that drew some negative attention? Yes. But what kind of negative attention? I suggested that it was malicious in an attempt to malign Brandon Herrera, and a reporter went into near fits at my suggestion. So we'll take a look at that too. All kinds of things going on in the 9 o'clock hour. Come on, make it a part of your day. Mark Davis, 8:58.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.